What is a Bitcoin public miner doing launching an L2? That's the topic of this episode. This week, I have Julian Duran on the pod, who is a product lead at Marathon Digital, which is one of the larger public Bitcoin miners out there. And they're doing some very interesting things going into the halving, one of them being this thing called Enduro, which is a hub that can launch an ecosystem of L2s. Privacy focused one. They have a Bitcoin Core one that you can like bring ordinals into. They have a new one called Alice, which is an EVM based one, mainly targeted for large institutions, which are very risk off when it comes to new languages and stuff. So they like Solidity and EVM. So big topics. There's a bunch to cover here. Marathon's doing some very interesting things. So had to get him on. This one was fantastic. But before we jump in, we are going in to bull market vibes. We're hitting all-time highs. Things are just getting started. And so, to bring the best content I freaking can to you guys, I'm doing a couple things. First, I'm looking for one to two sponsors to expand the podcast a little bit. So, if you think it'd be a good fit to be sponsored on this show, then hit me up. Second way you can support the pod is check out this QR code right here. You can pause the video, scan this Lightning QR code, and send me some sweet sat love. I would love you forever. Appreciate all you guys who've been listening over the years. Okay. Without further ado, let me shut up and bring my excellent guest, Julian Duran, product lead at Marathon Digital.
Welcome to Built on Bitcoin.
Julian, how you doing today, my man?
Doing well. Coming off a long journey from Dubai, but happy. Happy Friday. How are you, Jacob?
Not flying from Dubai for sure, so don't have any of that, but also feeling good. Lots of stuff happening at Bitcoin. It's a crazy, crazy time, including what you guys are working on. So there's a ton to talk about. And yeah, it's interesting because I think we first connected maybe 6 or 8 months ago.
Oh, yeah. I think you talked to me the last time we actually spoke was when this was a full R&D phase. I mean, we were ideas on a whiteboard. Now,
yep. It's crazy, too, because I remember when I first met you and I heard the idea, I'm like, that's crazy. Like a public miner is doing R&D for an L2, and like it made sense to go EVM because of all the developer support. And I was like, there's no way that's so risky. And now it's like you announced it at ETH Denver. There's so many L2s in the narrative. It's not even crazy. It's like you were ahead of the curve and thinking very, you know, pragmatically. So that's a lot we want to touch on. But I love to always start with a basic background question for my guests of like, how'd you get into Bitcoin? Because everyone gets here for different reasons. So yeah, I'm curious, like just a brief overview, like what's your background and how'd you get into Bitcoin?
Yeah, my background's kind of all over the place. So I started my career in finance and consulting, ended up giving up that life because of the monotony, I guess you could say, and ended up in social impact work in Latin America, started a number of nonprofits there. I'm originally from Ecuador, and so I always had an interest in the region. After like the nth nonprofit, realized that China and East Asia, generally speaking, play a big role in social impact work in LATAM. And so I ended up doing a master's program in Beijing. Learned Chinese, did the whole works, ended up in Chinese clean energy. COVID policies made it really hard to live there. I ended up in fintech in Southeast Asia. And just while I was in fintech, that's really where I started getting alerted to crypto. So this was maybe like 4 or 5 years ago, where I started getting the sense that maybe this is actually, I mean, my fintech job was I love the company, but admittedly, it wasn't very technology forward. You know, fintech nowadays, it's basically navigating regulations. And so I started hearing about different friends raising for startups in crypto. And I started saying, oh, well, you know, a lot of this like blockchain technology, even something simple like a multi-sig is pretty revolutionary. And like, that's technology. And so anyway, I ended up pivoting into, I actually started my crypto journey in the Ethereum world, anathema, right? But it was never for like the tokens or like the ICOs or anything like that. For me, the interest has always been what could it mean for the emerging world? And in particular, what new financial primitives can you create? And so started a number of DeFi companies, was a part of a number as well, somewhat better than others, of course. And yeah, wound up in Marathon about a year ago. And that was really the start of my Bitcoin journey. And again, came at it much less from the price perspective and much more for the innovation potential. I think it's the one blockchain asset that the number of DeFi startups I've begun and the number of times I would get asked by users, hey, is this Bitcoin, was just astounding. And so after like the nth time of getting that question, you know, it begs the question, all right, why am I just not in Bitcoin? Like, this is what people know. This is what people love. And here we go. Now I'm starting a layer two.
Love it. So yeah, so the big angle for you initially sounds like it was the kind of like financial freedom and the open permissions networks that crypto allows. And you started over on the ETH side, but then came to Bitcoin. How's that transition been? Because like, we're seeing it more now, but they've been very divided for years. Now they're blending and kind of, it's hard to tell where one starts and one begins. But yeah, I'm curious how the move was from ETH, especially into a Bitcoin mining company like Marathon. Like, what was that transition like?
Yeah, I mean, look, it was much easier given the people that I work with. Like, in particular, the director of engineering at Marathon, like my technical counterpart for Enduro, has basically, Michael Casey, he's taught me everything that I need to know. So really, it helps. It made it a lot easier coming and working with somebody who's been in the industry since 2012. And so it's funny, like, people will ask me about Bitcoin history, and I'll know a lot of things, like a lot more than somebody who's just been into it for like a year would know. And it's largely from him. And that's the thing about Marathon, is you have a lot of people, the vast majority of the company, very, very Bitcoin forward, very, very intrigued in the technology. We got some people experimenting with like Lightning nodes and others that, you know, early participants in Stacks. Like it's a very diverse set of people. And so because of that, it was really easy to get up to speed. I mean, I also just love learning about new things, and I've never been much of a tribalistic person. So it's just, I was never like, you know, ETH camp only. There was a brief time where I did a startup actually in Solana. And so I even stepped in that ecosystem briefly. But yeah, Bitcoin, what I liked about it and what was great is if you show a genuine interest in getting to know the community, understanding the technology, appreciating the history, people appreciate that, which is something you don't really get in other blockchain ecosystems. And it's often a criticism, you know, people are like, well, Bitcoin, like it's very, you know, cultish or whatever. But I actually think it's people who are like, they have a purpose for doing what they're doing. They're not just in it to, again, some people are just in it to get rich, but it's not as much of a scammy vibe as I saw in the rest of blockchain. So it was an easy transition. I think it was a welcomed one.
Makes sense. Cool. Then, yeah, I'll let me just jump into L2 stuff, because I think there's a lot to cover here. And so maybe a roundabout way is we're like maybe a month and a week from the halving. We'll see what day it lands on. And, you know, going back to how we talked 8 months ago or so, and you were already exploring this R&D thing, I'm curious how are miners kind of broadly preparing for the halving? Because most of us don't think about it. We just know that, you know, supply gets cut in half, which by definition means a lot of your revenue is cut in half because the block subsidy. Which these are things like R&D, like you guys are doing. So yeah, just broad strokes, like how do miners think about the halving going into this one?
Well, truthfully, I think miners are the best position to innovate ahead of the halving, because you get the best innovation out of scarcity. And the reality is most miners, every miner really, you can't be a miner if you're not pragmatic. They're intensely, intensely pragmatic and intensely profit motive driven. And that's something that's missing in most of the layer two blockchain adoption space. You know, most companies, they raise eye-watering venture rounds, and then they go off and burn that money on senseless grant programs. But on the miner business model, the miner psyche is always to be very, very cost-focused and to be very profit-driven. And so because of that, how miners look at the halving, it's new revenue streams. That's primary. It's top of mind. There's, of course, a lot of cost-cutting and optimization. I think Marathon is leading the pack in that regard. But in terms of finding new ways to earn revenue, you have a lot of different miners trying different things. You have some getting involved in, you know, the inscriptions marketplaces and, you know, really being thought leaders in ordinals. You have others that are getting involved in other sort of layer twos. You have others that are just trying to change the script altogether and even get into AI. And where my initiative at Marathon comes into play is thinking, all right, well, we have this money-making business model of earning transaction fees on layer one. What if we created a layer two that also, you know, accrued Bitcoin denominated transaction fees? And so anyway, it's because of that focus on the bottom line that you have with the mining companies, broadly speaking, the mining industry. Yeah, they look at the halving as it's an impetus to innovate, and a very, very strong one at that.
Yep. No, that makes perfect sense. I like the way you frame it as something miners are pragmatic by nature, just because of the way the business is. And I agree, like I come from the VC background, and some of those rounds are getting frothy already. And that means, you know, they can go with crazier ideas, or maybe they're not as frugal with their money, and all these things become tensions for building a good startup, because there is something about constraints kind of breed creative solutions. You see, as ordinals, like Bitcoin can't do that, but then again, it can. And now it's taken over this whole new thing. So it becomes like the unlock of thinking in a proper way. So through that lens, kind of going into L2s now, how do you guys think about L2s? Because like you're building one, there's a wide variety of solutions: Lightning, rootstock and merge mining, which kind of helps the idea is like settle down to miners, stacks. So before I jump into Enduro, like help me understand, how do miners think about L2?
Yeah, look, I'd say that the number one thing that people have to keep in mind with miners is that the vast majority did not get into mining because they were degens at heart looking to go farm a bunch of different tokens. They got into mining because they wanted Bitcoin. Simple as that. And so if you're thinking about a layer two, and you're thinking about, well, what does a layer two mean, right? It has to be built on top of something. Layer two means there must be some layer one, right? Logically, that would be the case. And so any layer two that isn't paying layer one for inheriting its security and appeal, and in particular, that isn't contributing to proof of work, by our definition at Marathon, it's simply not a layer two. You know, it's something else, right? I don't know what you want to call it, but it's not a layer two. And so the first way that miners look at it, at least us, and I think a lot of other miners as well, is they first think, all right, wait, does this actually benefit our business model, or is it something completely out of left field, creating totally new economic incentives? But the second and very important thing, because there's a lot of ecosystems that claim to pay miners, but they don't pay them in Bitcoin-denominated assets. And this matters. You know, at the end of the day, yeah, Bitcoin's not the only asset that accrues value. I mean, again, as I mentioned earlier, I come from the ETH world, all right? There was a time when I was a, you know, quote-unquote shitcoiner, but the point about it is that in the mining world, it's inherently profit-centric, and again, it's very Bitcoin-centric. And so to offer rewards to miners that are not in Bitcoin-denominated assets, you're just shrinking your market share. You're basically offering a product to a group of entities that just don't really care about anything else other than Bitcoin. And so when a miner thinks about layer two, what I've seen at least is they're really keen on how does this actually benefit layer one, but they're also very keen on how they can earn Bitcoin off of it, right? And it's only with that Bitcoin profit motive that they will actually jump and actually provide a lot of network security. There are exceptions. Mining is an incredibly decentralized, I mean, in some ways there's some fears of centralization, but it is still fairly decentralized. You have a lot of mining pools, a lot of different miners all across the world, many of which are just totally unaccounted for. We have no idea where they are. So that there are exceptions to this rule, of course. But if you're a layer two and you're trying to get a vast amount of market share legitimately, not by some like funky accounting logic, but actually get a majority of mining hash rate devoted to your layer two chain, you have to pay in an asset that they care about. And so that was one of the defining principles for us was, and it was not even just a defining principle. It was a defining principle. And they brought me on and they said, all right, look, you're a founder. You know how to build businesses. Tell us if this is correct. And that's the first thing I found. It was like one of the earliest, like when this was in its earliest R&D phases, one of the first things that I was able to validate quicker than anything else was, what will it take for other miners to participate? Bitcoin denominated rewards. Simple as that. Needs to be at the center.
Yep. No, that makes sense. And you see that with merge mining, like rootstock, which a big chunk of the miners do rootstock. And we're seeing this with rollups, which we'll see, you know, how BitVM plays out, and eventually an opcode upgrade as these things work out. But that's, most of them say that they'll pass down fees down to miners. So all that's incentive aligned. So yeah, so getting into Enduro then, like how, give me the broad strokes of like what, that's one, is incentive alignment. So we have that kind of locked in. But like, how are you thinking about, you know, building an L2 that is miner incentive aligned? And then you're also bringing in like how to bring in, you know, users, et cetera.
Yeah, two core defining principles. Number one is that every Enduro, by the way, is a vision for a multi-chain ecosystem that is composed of Bitcoin sidechains. Two defining principles for all of those sidechains. Number one is that the native asset has to be Bitcoin pegged. And it's funny because when we first spoke, this was anathema. Most calls I would get on, people would just be like, well, you know, what's going to be the incentive for builders to build if it's just Bitcoin at the site? Why would... To me, this kind of like I came back to my fintech background where there are multi-billion dollar unicorn level fintech startups. None of them are creating new currencies. They're creating new ways to utilize currency. They're not creating a new national currency. And I think that's the same thing for layer twos, is that there are models in which that makes sense. I'm not going to make a claim on every single layer two has to be exactly toward my definition. I'm not saying that. But at its core, you can drive value without creating a new native asset. And so for us, that was one of the most important things. It's like whatever we're creating, we're not doing a token raise. We're not doing a pre-mint. We're not doing a pre-sell. And we've gotten some people on Twitter who are like, oh, look at Marathon getting into the L2 space and, you know, releasing another shitcoin. No, there's none of that. Like, we're building a platform upon which you can issue non-native assets, but that's not Marathon's game. Marathon's game is we're going to create a layer where Bitcoin is at the heart. Simple as that. And the second big defining principle is that proof of work has to be at the center of consensus. Now, note, I didn't say proof of work is the only element of consensus, because the reality is proof of work, well, there's a few things, right? It's probabilistic finality at the end of the day. So you got to wait a certain number of blocks and it's actually confirmed. Takes what, like 10 minutes, maybe if you want actual confirmation, 30 minutes. That's untenable for most of DeFi. And so what we've experimented with all the Enduro chains we're creating is hybrid consensus models where you have proof of work, again, at the center as a central player. Miners are intimately involved in block creation and block propagation. However, you have the involvement of other actors to speed things along or to provide things like MEV resistance or to do a number of different other protocol innovations that aren't possible with vanilla merge mining. And so that's basically where we wanted to go with this, is how can we create a layer that actually benefits main chain network secures, i.e. miners, but also that keeps Bitcoin at the heart of it. And I think the important thing of all of that is it means that every Enduro sidechain that comes to market is inherently Bitcoin aligned. What is Bitcoin at the end of the day, right? It's a piece of technology, but it's, and I've heard this from a number of different core devs, is it is an exercise in social consensus. And so insofar as it's an exercise in social consensus, you need to adopt the same incentives behind that consensus on a layer two for it to also be part of that Bitcoin ecosystem. So for us, that was most important. But beyond that, what did I say from the get-go? This is a multi-chain ecosystem. In terms of which stack, which programmability standard, what type of hybrid consensus model, that we're very much leaving up to the community. And of course, Marathon, in conjunction with other partners, is building the first two sidechains, making them, you know, kind of like tailor-made, ready for the community to experiment with. But our ultimate vision is we just want sidechains that fit the proper definition of what a Bitcoin sidechain is. But what they do beyond that is completely up to the market. And we really want to create an ecosystem as varied and as innovative as, you know, others in you know, the non-Bitcoin world. So that's really the goal at the end of the day. Multi-chain, obviate developer learning curves, but keep Bitcoin at the heart of incentives and at the heart of what's driving the layer two forward.
I want to double click on the multi-layer piece, because it's hard to understand sometimes when what's an L2, what's an L3, we're not even there to whatever L4 means. Like, these get application specific or whatever. So just to help us understand, like, is Enduro, is it a chain? And then these other chains are L3s? Is it more of a, like a hub that the first point you touch to is going to go through Enduro and directly into a side chain like coordinate, like we'll get these names in here in a second, but like help me understand what this might look like tactically for people who are going to use it.
Of course, yeah. Enduro is a platform for launching sidechains. So your latter description of it being like the conduit, and then from there you have these different sidechains being spawned. That's it. You can almost consider Enduro, it's not like a central, like it's not like a SaaS platform or anything like that. Enduro is in many ways a concept. It's a vision. It's a vision for, here are two standards, the native asset, the proof of work, for creating sidechains. And we want to create a number of different sidechains on top of that standard. Now, I will say, in terms of the sidechains themselves, so the first two, like you mentioned, the first one is Coordinate, the second one is Alice. There could be three, there could be four, there could be five. But what classifies an Enduro sidechain is really just that fidelity to Bitcoin main chain incentives. As long as it's truthful to that and tied to that, anchored to that, it's an Enduro sidechain by our definition.
So then on the two that you've put forward, say more on that. Like what's the focus here? How are they different, etc.?
Look, for the listener who might be new to sidechains and all of that world, a sidechain is just extending Bitcoin functionality off of the Bitcoin main chain. So the guiding principle is we don't want to do any sort of soft fork to Bitcoin. We're not trying to push some opcode change, and we're certainly not trying to push the conversation on other networks. We want to create more functionality tied to Bitcoin, but not necessarily on Bitcoin itself. So the concept of a sidechain actually predates me, and it predates even some of my like most hardcore Bitcoiner colleagues. It's something that's been talked about for a very long time. And the goal is essentially, all right, what sort of new layer can we create with new types of programmability to enable new types of use cases? In other words, how can we serve the needs of application developers going forward and not just the application developers from the past decade? And so in light of that, we came with two different strategies that are actually wildly different. And that's actually why I love this program or this project, this initiative, because it's it puts my mind in a lot of different directions. So the first angle that we took is coordinates. And so coordinate, it's actually a play on the word ordinals, ordinals and coordinate grid, coordinate. Because the real idea there is how can we create a sidechain? How can we create a layer two that solves important scalability concerns with how ordinals, BRC20s, whatever, any inscriptions technology with how they currently operate on main chain. Now, this is me recognizing that a big reason people use ordinals, BRC20, and all of that is because it is natively on the main chain. I'm not trying to deny that that's an important use case, but the inscription can live on the main chain. The transacting doesn't necessarily have to live there, right? And you hear this for a lot of times from ordinals builders and inscriptions teams is, man, okay, well, fees spiked. I can't, mint my next collection. I need to wait until things get better. We're entering a bull run. We probably already are in a bull run. How is that going to scale going forward? And so the goal with coordinate is how can we build an infrastructure that is as Bitcoin native as possible? It's even on Bitcoin script. It's Bitcoin backwards compatible. It's a UTXO side chain. It looks and feels like Bitcoin, but it has a few key innovations. One in particular, which is you can spawn non-native UTXOs on it. In other words, you can issue assets natively on chain. You don't need to rely on off-chain indexers or off-chain anything for that matter. You don't have to rely on hacks. It is literally embedded into the protocol layer that you can have fungible assets, non-fungible assets on top of the Bitcoin native asset. And so because of that, what coordinate is really supposed to be about is how can we offer a stack that it's very easy that in the world where main chain fees continue rising, you can take ordinals, you can put them on there, and you can still do all of what you were doing before. But it's not just that. Lightning Network, as an example, you'd mentioned that earlier as like, another scaling solution. We don't view that as a competitor ecosystem. In fact, on coordinates, since it is a UTXO chain, you can actually implement Lightning and not deal with any of these problematic channel opening and closing constraints, right? Like that's the issue with Lightning is you have to open and close a channel if you want to settle. Well, on coordinate, it's very easy to implement the same methodology, the same technology. It's simply now it's cheaper to do it. It's cheaper and faster, right? So that's coordinate. It's not us trying to be prescriptive, and it's not even us trying to necessarily dictate a direction. It's creating interesting technology that looks and feels like Bitcoin, but works faster, cheaper, smoother, right? That's the goal. The second side chain, this is where things get interesting as well, is here we want to be a little bit more prescriptive. And here we want to kind of like guide a thesis and something that I believe Marathon is uniquely positioned to offer the market that no other layer two can. And so this is where the Alice side chain comes into play. It's an EVM compatible side chain. So all of the smart contracts somebody can do on Ethereum, you can do on Alice. But the difference is the native asset, again, is Bitcoin pegged. And the consensus mechanism is highly, highly dependent on proof of work. What does that create? I think that's going to be the place for institutional demand. And it's a narrative that you hear being talked about with the Bitcoin ETF, but very rarely do you see a Bitcoin layer two talking up their potential to capture institutional demand for things like RWAs, for things like loyalty, for things like DePIN. Whatever the topic, it's very hard to imagine other layer twos capturing institutional demand. Because they're not backed by big institutions. The vast majority of them are themselves, venture-backed teams and early teams. And while that's okay and that's perfect for like the degen audience, we believe that Marathon is specially suited to attract blue chip-like institutions. A world in which more bonds are issued on, for example, a layer two, we think is one in which it would be on Alice. right? Say a token, I don't know, a commodity provider in a random part of the world wants to tokenize their commodity in order to sell it to more investors. We think that's more likely to happen on a resilient, on a chain that's going to exist for the next 5 to 10 years guaranteed. That's where Alice comes into play. And the EVM part, it has nothing to do with my background in Ethereum, and it really has nothing even to do with our faith and solidity or lack thereof. It's just that if you go and get on the phone with institutions, literally, I can give you the Rolodex 10 institutions right now to talk right after this podcast, and you ask them, hey, I'm building a layer two. I guarantee you their first question is going to be, all right, okay, I don't understand what that means, but the little I know is it EVM, right? Can I use ERC-20? Can I use it? That's what they ask. And we can have a bunch of arguments whether or not ERC is a good standard or the Solidity is a good programming standard. But when you speak to institutions and to customers, they don't want to hear about anything else. And so Alice is a recognition of that. It's a recognition that innovating the stack for institutions just doesn't make sense. And that if you really want to get to the institutional DM, so to speak, you got to pitch them a solution that makes sense to them or that causes as few frictions as possible. You're already getting these TradFi guys to try to accept crypto, making them accept new programmability standards out of the question. So that's really the vision with both side chains.
Interesting. So institutions see BTC, the asset, as robust, and they see EVM, the virtual machine, as robust infrastructure. Is that kind of the way to think about it?
I would say they don't necessarily see the EVM as robust. They just see it as convenient. Because let's put ourselves into the mindset of a decision maker for like a big bank that's thinking of tokenizing some, like, I don't know, some private credit vertical, just to give an example, right? To port it over to our like crypto understanding, all right? Like you, I'm sure you, as part of a venture capital firm, there are a lot of things that you have to do that are not totally related to investment, maybe like accounting, right? Like you guys got to figure out accounting. At the end of the day, the books have to reconcile and you need to get a good accountant on your payroll. Well, how do you judge a good accountant, right? If I come to you and I pitch you this elaborate, beautiful solution for a new finance department or a new type of accountant, and I get into all these complex finance terms and accounting terms and yada, yada, and give you this full elaborate pitch, you as a decision maker are going to tune out because that isn't your core competency. Your core competency is investing in Bitcoin startups, all right? That's where you want to pay your attention to. And so if someone comes with a 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hour long pitch that requires a college level course to explain to you a new type of accounting, you're not going to pay attention. It's not that you find your existing accounting department robust, you just don't want to think about that. That's the same how EVM works with institutions that are considering any sort of blockchain initiative. They don't want to think about the implementation detail. And the reality is if right now I wanted to hire a blockchain engineer, I could find a Solidity one much quicker than I could find a Bitcoin one. I know that. I mean, we're doing that for a long time with Gordon, and we were trying to hire a big team of people who are Bitcoin experts. And it was hard. It was hard. That's not to say there aren't many Bitcoin experts, but the vast majority are tied up in projects, or they have different commitments and they're in different parts of the world. EVM, it's so easy to find somebody who can just code you up a smart contract because it's like, you know, it's not rocket science. It's right. It's a JavaScript based language. Like it's supposed to be accessible. And so that's really how I see it. I think they view Bitcoin as robust. No question. But EVM, it's just convenient. And that's really what we wanted to do with Enduro. Let's maximize convenience for everybody trying to use it.
Got it. That makes a ton of sense as you broke it down. So appreciate that. I want to double click on Coordinate for a second because I'm very bullish on EVM broadly because of Interop. But yeah. I think UTXO-based chains are going to have their sweet spot too because the L1 and any subsequent UTXO chain will have native assets, DLCs, you know, Lightning is getting taproot channels. So there's a lot of interoperability to float from chain to chain that you lose if you go EVM and you have to wrap it in some kind of clever way. So just to double click on Coordinate, you said it's UTXO based, faster, cheaper. What's the last word? Did you say smarter? Smooth. I think. What's that? Smoother?
It's smoother. Yeah.
Yep. So can we expect then? Is this going to be closer to Bitcoin Core, but just with more, you know, bigger blocks or whatever, so you get better there? Or, you know, Liquid does have some things that Core doesn't have, like OpCap, for example. So could we see Coordinate be a testing bed for this UTXO stuff that you can turn on or be closer to Core? I'm curious on that question.
Yeah, very, very much so. Look, at the end of the day, both chains and Coordinate in particular, we're putting it out there to the community. They're right now in alpha, heading into a public beta. But with Coordinate, when it hits public beta, our big focus is not going to be pitching everybody on our exact way of implementing, you know, upgrades to Bitcoin Core, to in particular like our fork of Bitcoin Core that is Coordinate. The goal is really just to showcase it to the community and see, hey, where do you guys think this should go? And we do see it as like a good place where it could be a testing ground for future innovations that maybe one day lead to downstream impacts on Bitcoin Core. But to be very, very clear here, the goal of Coordinate is not to push the envelope on any of the Bitcoin Core debates. I mean, maybe it ends up doing so because people transact or they do an upgrade and, you know, people end up using it a lot. Who knows? Our real goal is, all right, there's all these heated debates about how to change Bitcoin Core. Let's just have a side chain that looks and feels like that. And that here we can push and we can offload, so to speak, all of that innovative transacting. Bitcoin main chain should be lean by design. It should be the way it needs to be. We respect the consensus that has been achieved. It's been a hard fought consensus. I wasn't here for it, but from what I hear in the horror stories, the last thing I want to do is start another battle, right? Like the goal is create a layer two where those battles can play out, the proxy wars, right? Like nobody needs to go and fight and change the beloved Bitcoin that we know, you know, that we know today. It's how can we create another place where that innovation can happen? So yeah, that's essentially what Coordinate is. It's the current innovation that we put on it is we basically took a soft fork of Bitcoin Core and we added in native asset issuance capabilities. We also added in something called pre-confirmed transactions, which basically just means that you have a MEV-resistant, faster channel for transacting where you can, for example, one could build a decentralized exchange on Coordinate and benefit from much lower slippage, MEV resistance, et cetera, in a way that you can't really on an EVM chain. There's no EVM chain that has really solved that issue of MEV resistance to the same extent that Coordinate will on day one. So that's really the goal, is like provide those like piecemeal innovations and yeah, then kind of see where the community wants to take it. Maybe they want to experiment with some new op return. Awesome. Let's do it. Let's work together and figure it out. But Coordinate, like I said, very, very different approaches. Alice, we have a thesis and we're pushing it. Coordinate, we're building cool tech and we want you guys to come and, you know, contribute to that cool tech with us. Let's see where it goes. We're excited.
Love it. Love it. Okay. Then question on, you know, whenever you go to L2, there's a question of trust assumptions, which has an element of, you know, peg mechanism, and how is this secured, consensus, all these kind of things. So help me understand those two mechanisms. So how is Bitcoin flowing in and out? And then what is kind of node running and consensus look like in Enduro?
Of course. Yeah. Just to preface that, I'd say one of the biggest priorities I have for how Enduro is pitched to the world is I'm not trying to hide anything, right? The first thing we did is when we announced, we released the light paper. More than welcome anybody to read it. Enduro.io, that's where you can find all that stuff. I'm not hiding anything. And it's funny because a lot of Bitcoin layer twos that come out, you go and you try to double click on these sort of trust assumptions. Oh, and the link's broken. Or, oh, there's no light paper. Oh, oops, forgot to include technical docs. That's not what we're trying to do here. We want to be very, very explicit about what's possible. And in many ways, recognizing the fact that Bitcoin still has some way to go. We are very excited about innovations like BitVM, and we're very excited to see the future of ZK rollups. But none of those things are possible at a production level scale today. And so to go back to your particular question, how is Bitcoin flowing in and out? Via basically a consortium of entities. You can call it a federated main chain peg. Trying to use a different word, the collective, that the Enduro collective is basically a consortium of up to 15 entities that attest to peg ins and peg outs from main chain Bitcoin into side chain, into Alice, into Coordinate, and then, you know, vice versa. So how does that work? You have a multisig on the main chain. You have a multisig on each of the side chains. Anytime Bitcoin is locked in the main chain multisig, one of the side chains will have side chain Bitcoin, the native asset minted. Anytime that sidechain native asset is returned to a multisig on a particular sidechain, that's burned and the Bitcoin at the main chain gets unlocked. We're not burning Bitcoin at any process, at any point in this process. We're not creating an asset that isn't backed one-to-one by Bitcoin, and the redemptions happen at multiple points in a day. Now, this is actually important, and there's a lot of people ask, you know, well, what's your competitive edge as such a large miner to building a layer two? It's actually pegouts. And in fact, that's one of the most important things to us is we want everybody to know that pegging in can happen as soon as we're trying to aim it for, you know, maybe once every hour or something around that timetable. But pegouts, we strive to make it possible for 3 times a day pegging out. And the only reason we can do that is because we have the hash rate to back it up. Because think about it, a pegout at the end of the day, no matter how you're trying to do it, and no, ZK rollups are not at a state where you can just do it trustlessly. At the end of the day, somebody is going to have to make a Bitcoin transaction, right? Because Bitcoin from one address, from one multisig or one address or one whatever, is going to have to be unlocked and sent to another address. That is how pegging out is going to work, no matter the layer two. The benefit is Marathon mines several, many blocks a day. And so we can be rest assured that users wanting to peg out, there is a commitment on the side of Marathon to include that in the next block or the next available block in a way that no other layer two can guarantee. You know, other layer twos, they wait, you know, 100 confirmations or maybe a few days, whatever. In our case, we can make sure that no matter the fee market conditions, pegouts will be happening. So that's how Bitcoin flows in and out. It's via multisig. It's a very simple approach. We try to make it as decentralized as possible, but it's definitely not permissionless. That's just the state of Bitcoin today. And we really hope that BitVM continues advancing and there are ways to make this system more trustless, but that's how Bitcoin flows in and out. Now, in terms of consensus and node running, so consensus, it depends on the sidechain, but for actually both Alice and Coordinate, it's fairly similar how we're doing this. It's a hybrid proof of work, proof of authority consensus model where you have miners mining blocks and whatnot, but where you have the collective, this entity that's securing the main chain, pegging in and pegging out, as I described, is basically signing periodic blocks to ensure fork resistance, to ensure MEV resistance, and to basically ensure consensus level upgrades on top of vanilla merge mining. So that's the hybrid model that we've taken into account. Now, again, sidechain 3, sidechain 4, sidechain 5, we don't know. Like, we want Bitcoin, we want proof of work to be at the center of it. Doesn't matter what other parts come at the side of it, and we're open to community feedback as to what are better ways to mix in merge mining with other consensus models. But at least at the get-go, that's basically how consensus is working for both Alice and Coordinate. And in terms of node running, look, for Coordinate, it's going to be a very similar and light node as Bitcoin. In the case of Alice, the EVM chain, it's definitely going to be heavier, but the assumptions are the same, right? Like, at the end of the day, we want to make node running as easy and as simple as possible. We want to make it something that is accessible. And in particular, we want to make it something where the community is incentivized to run these nodes, especially people who are building on these chains, you know, the network securers, the collective, et cetera, et cetera. So all of that carries over.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay. And on, so going with the collective or federation, depending how you want to use the word,
right.
Is it right to assume that every collective member is also merge mining? So they're all miners?
Not necessarily. So obviously, you know, Marathon will have an entity that is its, you know, representative in the collective, and Marathon, the miner, will also be merge mining, but that's actually not going to be the norm. And in fact, we're not trying to create a collective that's just all miners. You know, some of the other collective members will be announcing them very shortly, and you'll soon see that it's a diverse set. But look, we're interested in wallet providers and exchanges and custodians, maybe one or two extra miners. Again, we don't want to make it too mining heavy. Infrastructure providers, oracles, media outlets, right? Like infrastructure, layer two experts, a number of different companies and entities that we're looking to include in the collective. But we want to make it a few key rules. Has to be a proven blockchain builder. We're not trying to bring in some random entity that has nothing to do with blockchain, and they have to be Bitcoin forward, right? Number two is that they agree to never create a non-native asset. We want this to be as Bitcoin focused as possible. This isn't a money grab, right? You join the collective if you see the vision of Bitcoin DeFi going somewhere. Hey, if you want to create your own DeFi app and you want to create a new native asset on the basis of that and go and create a Uniswap competitor, go for it. But the chain itself remains Bitcoin loyal. And the last thing is that they're diverse, right? We want collective members from all across the world. And again, the early ones that we're going to be announcing, we have some in Europe and Asia. And the one part we don't have is in Latin America. And I really would like to see, I mean, I'm Latin American, right? So have to be loyal to my roots. Would love to see at least one collective member from there, but not too much traction on that continent. But the goal is to have a collective member, at least one in every continent, and hopefully in different verticals as well.
Nice. Okay. And just to make sure I got this right, the one of the innovations you're doing on the pegout process is because of your guys's hash rate and how much you can secure, blocks flowing, you're leaving a small subset of block space open to prioritize pegouts coming through the Enduro chain. Did I hear that right?
Exactly. Correct. Yeah.
Got it. Very cool. Okay. Then, yeah, I mean, this is a really interesting, cool design on the L2 space. If someone's hearing this and they want to get involved in either Coordinate, Enduro, somewhere, you keep dropping the word community, so like they want to be part of that community.
Yeah.
Where can they connect, and like how's the best way to get involved if they're trying to?
Yeah, well, if they want to send an email, enduro at mara.com, that's a good place where we've been collecting a lot of different inbound, and we've gotten a lot of it ever since announcing. Actually, it's funny. When we announced, we were kind of like geared up, because you release anything new in the Bitcoin world, and it's like, oh man, well, what's going to be the pushback? And there's been some pushback, but largely it's been very, very positive. And so we've gotten a number of different teams in SocialFi, in DeFi, in, totally different FI that is completely, has no definition yet, reach out and say, hey, I got this cool idea for a project. What do you think? We've also had some institutions reach out and say, hey, we were contemplating a blockchain project. This is cool that like a major NASDAQ company is sponsoring a new, or at least like behind a new Bitcoin layer two. What's going on here? So there's been a lot of inbound. I'd say enduro at mara.com is a good place if you just want to, check in and reach out directly via email. I'm on Twitter, Julian with two L's, 0701. But yeah, engaging with anybody in the team, we're making it very easy to contact us. I think that's one thing within like the crypto community. You often don't have like feedback forms, and it's very hard to meet the team. But yeah, you go on to enduro.io, you can send us a request, and we're constantly vigilating the inbox. We're early, right? Like any person who has a great idea, we can't promise we can sponsor and help and back every single idea, but we can at least give it a solid listen and give some great feedback. I really want to make this as collaborative an ecosystem as possible, because everybody talks of decentralization until it comes time to help, and then everybody becomes a jerk. Like, that's not the goal, all right? The goal is, if we're going to be collaborative, we're going to be both collaborative in, in verbally, but also in spirit. And so, yeah, it's also just driven by a real reality, which is that Marathon has core competencies in Bitcoin mining, right? This is our first time jumping into the layer two space. So in some ways, it's not only that we're asking for your help, we are, it's not only that we are asking for help, it's that we need it in many ways, right? We need that community to be involved in order for this to be the best layer two. And we have to remember what's at stake, right? At the end of the day, I don't see our competitors as being other Bitcoin layer twos. At the end of the day, if other Bitcoin's layer twos do well and they drive more inflows into Bitcoin, awesome, great. Like the more layer twos, the more successful layer twos on Bitcoin, the better. Our competitors are other ecosystems, right? Because the more of other ecosystem layer twos that exist and proliferate, is the fewer people holding, owning, and wanting to own Bitcoin, which then impacts us, impacts you, right? The goal is to kind of spread the pie beyond Bitcoin. And so, anybody who has a cool app idea, if it even tangentially involves Bitcoin, me and people on my team, more than happy to get on a call and discuss it more.
I'm gonna be excited to watch some Enduro-based teams come through my desk and invest in some of those. One question
Absolutely.
though, on BTC-based asset, love it for like incentive alignment. BTC is the asset you want to hold. The thing that it's difficult to do for any chain that does that is bootstrapping, obviously, because tokens allow you to print money out of thin air, and so you can just
Right.
throw tokens at devs, pull in TVL, etc. So how are you guys solving that problem of bootstrapping and like getting devs into the ecosystem with like incentives, etc.?
I think you hit the nail right on the head there, Jacob. And the important thing to remember is with the layer two, it's not so much a technology play as it is an ecosystem one, right? And in particular, this question of bootstrapping is something that I see so many layer twos come up. And a lot of them, funny enough, they'll pitch us on like getting involved in their layer two. And my first thing, I look at the team and I'm like, all right, do you guys know how much this is going to cost? Right? Because if you're not a big institution or you don't have a big balance sheet behind you, it is going to be really, really hard to bootstrap. The benefit I can tell you in the case of Enduro is, look, I'm not going to commit to any exact TVL at this stage. We'll have announcements on it shortly, but I'll just give you some statistics that are important to keep in mind. Right? Last quarter, Marathon made a $176 million investment into new mining equipment. We have 15,000 Bitcoin on the balance sheet. And there are many institutions lining up at the door to be part of the collective and really play a governance role. Which, look, if you're going to play a governance role in an ecosystem, we're going to be the types of partners who are going to demand that you have skin in the game. So in light of that, and in light of the type of partnerships that we can bring and the types of, you know, heavyweights that we can get to the table, I have no concerns about bootstrapping in the early days. And if anything, I think our bootstrapping is going to be at a much higher quality than any other chain out there. You know, printing tokens and giving them out to people, yeah, that sounds great on paper if the token ever rises in value. But, you know, let's imagine a layer two where people, I don't know, devs get incentivized via Bitcoin, or where they get incentivized via cold hard cash, right, and balance sheet, and, you know, things that they can actually go and buy things at the grocery store with. If anything, I'd say that's a better kind of bootstrapping. And I think it's going to attract a different kind of developer, particularly the ones that are serious teams that really want to build something into the future. And they're not really just looking to like accumulate a speculative asset. The goal here is really to pay people for the work that they're putting in. And so I'm not too concerned on that front. And it's what I think also sets us apart. You know, we're creating something that is built to last at the end of the day.
Well, then one big question is when mainnet, when testnet, you know, what's the product then?
Yeah, so right now we're in an alpha period where basically if there's a team that reaches out and wants to view the stack and like kind of like look into it, see what we've built, reach out. Enduro.io, we have all our contact info there. More than happy to chat and give access to the GitHub. The goal is in the next month to release an open beta, and there basically by before have like a GitHub repo that people can go and observe and test on. Where I'm particularly, we really like me, my model for a good go to market is kind of like what Coinbase did with Base, with the whole, you know, on-chain summer and this and that. Not the same approach, but I like that feeling that they created a feeling of camaraderie in the EVM ecosystem to go and test out this new chain. I really want to do something like that for Enduro. So anyway, more news on that coming shortly, but the open day beta period is supposed to be testnet, where anybody can come in, deploy their project, see how it works, see the transaction speeds, you know, evaluate throughput. That's when we can precision fees, make them as low as possible. And then when we hit the summer, after like an auditing process, of course, I think sometime around July, August, that's really when we want to target mainnet. But again, this isn't going to mainnet until it isn't properly audited. And that's another thing. Again, any layer two that's coming out, if they do not have millions on the balance sheet ready, like devoted to audits, do not put your money in that, right? Like our goal is to have this thoroughly, thoroughly audited before it reaches anything close to real funds. And the second bit is tested, right? We want the community to give their feedback. And who knows, maybe the community's feedback is like, throw all this out and like, here's a totally new chain we think you should build. Awesome, let's do it. Let's work together on it.
Yeah, there's some chains out there that don't even have docs with high TVL, not the least of which is, you know, proper audits.
No, so
respect on that. Cool. Well, we covered most of the questions I had. One kind of a left turn, but you mentioned, you know, you were kind of, you had your armor up, you know, expecting a pushback from Enduro launch, and it was a warmer welcome than you expected at some level. I have seen some pushback on Slipstream for different reasons. And for me, like, you know, I'm not in the Filthora camp. I kind of think that consensus and standardness rule should be closer together and just focus more on consensus and not this like disparity, because it's causing the rift we're seeing now. And you guys have built Slipstream very deliberately. Things go in band, all that. I'm just curious, like, how has the response been to Slipstream? Anything you could say on that?
Yeah, it's definitely been more mixed than Enduro. I think largely the community recognizes that, well, Slipstream does two things. Number one, it promotes the anti-censorship ethos of Bitcoin, generally speaking. We didn't build Slipstream to benefit a particular project. We're not building it to benefit particular projects. We built Slipstream to enable innovative transacting on mainchain. But then that leads into the second principle, which is nothing goes through Slipstream that is not consistent with Bitcoin consensus rules, right? And that's the most important thing. So I, you know, at the end of the day, will consensus rules and, you know, filtering rules, like, will they end up converging? Let's see. But really the goal with Slipstream is, hey, this is allowed to be on Bitcoin in the first place. If it shouldn't be allowed on Bitcoin, we leave that to the, you know, to the community to decide. But we are fulfilling the duty of miners, which is to be profit focused. Right. Without that profit motive, by the way, and this is what's underlying Enduro too. Without that profit motive, we don't have Bitcoin. Right. Nobody is securing Bitcoin's network out of pure altruism. I shouldn't say nobody. There are always exceptions to that rule. But by and large, the greatest driver of decentralization on Bitcoin is that focus on profits. And ahead of the halving, to go back to your first question to me, ahead of the halving, every miner is thinking about how to increase their bottom line ahead of the fact that, you know, the block reward is about to cut in half. And so slipstream in that sense, it makes sense from an economic standpoint, it makes sense from a philosophical standpoint. And so we stand by it in that regard. I will say one interesting thing of slipstream is the inbound of the number of projects wanting to do different sort of things is just incredible. And like we see a number of different players. We see, you know, like people who are in Web3, people who are not, people who are in Bitcoin, people who hate the term Web3, people who love it. It's a frenzy of different people that are proposing different ideas. Not all of them make it to the block space because, oh, sorry, there's a third thing about slipstream that's very important is it isn't free. In fact, it's like you have to pay extra to use slipstream. That was the whole point. It's if you're going to force us out of our comfort zone, then you're going to have to pay for it and you're going to have to pay a top dollar for it. So a lot of teams that have come up and said, oh, we want to do this crazy thing. If they're not willing to pay for it and if they're not paying the fair market price for it, we're not letting it in to the market. But if you're willing to pay a very high amount of Bitcoin for some new type of block standard, or not new type of block standard, but for a new type of transaction to be added into a block, open doors. That's the ethos behind slipstream. It's enable new types of transacting that's willing to pay for it. And that follows Bitcoin core consensus. So I in that regard, not too many qualms on slipstream. I also think a lot of the criticisms have been off base. Like you just mentioned, for example, the in-band side of things, like the transactions going through slipstream are paying us in band. So any concerns on like the FPPS fee calculation, it's not based in reality. Yep. Like it's as simple as that.
Yep. Makes sense. Yeah. I think you guys have worked Ordinal Spot, one of our portfolio companies. I think you guys have worked with them a decent amount. That team is awesome. One final kind of point on this, get your perspective on is, we have seen, you guys have Slipstream, and it goes directly to Mara. I think Mempool.space is a partnership with Foundry with their Accelerate product. So one view is that there's the public mempool and a bunch of direct-to-miner, you know, APIs, if you will. Yeah. Do you see a world where Slipstream gets kind of open-sourced or, like, many people leverage the tech, and there's two quasi-mempools? Like, I'm trying to figure out this, people call it, like, a dark pool and a public pool. And this is a new idea to me. I'm new to understanding mining at a deep level.
Yeah.
Any perspective, that'd be great.
Yeah. Look, I'll put it this way. The goal is to offer, or to have entry points to slipstream in as many places as possible. That's for sure. But again, the entry point has to satisfy the conditions that I said before, right? It has to be a transaction that follows Bitcoin core consensus. We also do have terms that, you know, you can't be publishing objectionable material. We're not just uploading anything, right? Like there's definitely a certain category of things that we're not going to enable. But in terms of making it accessible, we want to make it very accessible. Now, you know, to what extent does that, you know, does that create like this dark pool or like this like secondary pool? At the end of the day, remember, every transaction going through Slipstream has to pay a fee premium. And people already complain about Bitcoin being very expensive. So in my view, I don't think this is going to lead to some like bifurcated mempool. Like there's always going to be a sliver of demand that's willing to go nuts on terms of the fees that they're paying. That's never going to be the majority. And so that's the goal. And again, I hope Slipstream in many ways also starts some important conversations over, you know, all right, like what sort of transacting do we want to allow? And again, we're participants. We are one member of many all across the world in the Bitcoin network. And it, like I said before, it's an exercise in social consensus. We're here to provide an innovative product. If it ends up creating negative incentives or, you know, I'd mentioned this in a Spaces recently, if it ends up somehow harming Bitcoin itself, we are one of the largest holders of Bitcoin. We have a massive incentive to protect the network and we have maintained a strong loyalty to the Bitcoin community. So if we need to end up walking it back, if it ends up being a product that ends up harming our business model or others' business model within Bitcoin, open ears to consider it. I'll just say, at least in terms of what we're seeing now, it's fringe demand. It's small, you know, here and there, right? It's not the majority of transactions going through Slipstream. It's just, by and large, projects that want to launch things or ones that want to, you know, do something innovative or create like a really big block. It's like that sort of stuff. So I don't see a world in which it goes too crazy or, you know, creates some like massive secondary mempool or, you know, or creates a series of them. I don't see that happening.
Cool. Well, we covered a lot. That's all the questions I have. I mean, I think Enduro is a super interesting take on an L2. So I'm excited to see how this plays out. Any closing thoughts or things that I didn't touch on that you want to close with?
Yeah, I'll just say that the one of the founding principles of Enduro is to really create a proper Bitcoin sidechain, and in particular to stimulate new kinds of use cases. I really think that Bitcoin is an incredible network, and you have an incredible array of layer twos that are doing a number of different things, advancing demand in areas that, you know, Enduro can only hope to one day reach. But really the focus is, what are new narratives that Enduro can stimulate? You know, and so I think institutional adoption, RWAs, that's a really big place that some other networks have tried, but there's really not much traction there. So hoping really to like reshape the perception there. But in other ways, we like, much like Slipstream, we want to enable new forms of transacting things, use cases that the market hasn't even dreamt of yet. And so my hope is that Enduro feels like a very different network, that like Marathon's layer two team creates something that's very different in nature and differentiated. And again, it all comes back to that miner incentive. At the end of the day, miners are practical, right? They're profit-seeking entities. They have a balance sheet. They have robust profits. So nothing of what we do is going to be based on some like pie-in-the-sky mentality or philosophy. It's, at the end of the day, we want to create a business and we want it to be really big and well-functioning. And only under those set of circumstances will we continue diving into these efforts. And so because of that, I think Enduro is going to strike a new narrative in the layer two space. I think it's going to be a layer two that a lot of institutions and a lot of like credible teams respect. And I think it's going to be something that's going to be around for a while, because again, what's the incentive for this to continue? Activity, right? Enduro doesn't exist 10 years from now if press is just good, right? Like, it only exists if there is activity, if there are fees flowing to the main chain. And so I think that's when you have the great product, when you have a product backed by a great team, incentives are aligned. And that's Enduro at the end of the day. So very bullish myself. I'm one of the creators of it, so obviously I'm biased, but I think those underlying qualities of it really make it a formidable L2 and not just, you know, some fad that dies out in a few months.
Well said. Yeah, I'm excited to see how it plays out, but I think it's looking damn promising from what I'm hearing. Well, cool, man. I got nothing to add. Thank you so much for coming on and, you know, dropping knowledge. This is great for everyone listening. Links will be in the description per usual for email, learn about Enduro white paper, check out their website. So yeah, man, Julian, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jacob. Looking forward to the next one.
Thank you for listening this far into the episode. If you found it enjoyable, please do like, subscribe on whatever platform that you're listening on. YouTube does me a huge favor to like and subscribe. Find me on Twitter at Jake Blockchain. Show me some love. I reply to every DM. And if you are a Bitcoin builder that is kind of at the forefront of building new use cases, whether it's L1, Lightning, Stacks, Rootstock, Rollups, Ordinals, BRC20, I want to talk to you. So when I'm not doing this podcast, I am the sourcing partner at the Bitcoin Frontier Fund, where we invest in Bitcoin startups at the earliest stages, give you access to whatever you need, whether it's legal, product, fundraising help, as well as capital. So love to talk to you. You can hit me up again. Find me on Twitter at Jake Blockchain and shoot me a DM. I'll read everything. Love to talk to you guys. All right. Peace.
Welcome to Built on Bitcoin.
I know that things don't always go your way, but I'll be right here waiting.
I've been waiting now. I've been trying to figure out a way to make it out. Make it out, 'cause I don't think about